This is WGTDHD. You're listening to Education Matters, the only weekly broadcast in southeastern Wisconsin devoted exclusively to educational issues. Education Matters is co-hosted by Guida Brown, former executive director of the Hope Council, Dr. Steve Brown, retired professor of educational leadership and school law, Dr. Karen Sconsert, chair of the education department and associate professor at Carthage College, Dr. Jonathan Shaler, professor of communications at UW Parkside, and Stephanie Skilba, Vice President for Community and Government Relations at Gateway Technical College. And now, here's today's moderator for Education Matters.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to Education Matters. I'm Bob Haggerty, and we're thrilled. Today, the Superintendent of Schools for Kenosha, Dr. Weiss, thank you so much for joining us.
Well, thank you. Thank you for having me.
The topic today is the schools and potential closings. Something that, as I'm sure over the last couple of months, that you've seen really people get to be very passionate about.
They do. A school really takes on the...
Before we start that, you've been about a year... A lot of people still are learning about you. Give us a 90-second synopsis of, I know you started your career in Kenosha, right?
Right. Back in 94, I subbed for the second semester. I graduated from Parkside in the December of 93. My first paycheck in education was from Kenosha Unified. I had a couple of long-term sub positions. I taught summer school at Lincoln Middle School that summer. And then I was hired by Racine Unified as a reading teacher. So,
and from there, administration?
Sure. Well, I taught in Racine for a year. And since I was hired, that was back with collective bargaining. And if you were hired after a certain date, your position was reposted. I didn't quite understand the whole dynamics of how that worked. I got a notice that my job was being reposted. I thought I was being let go. Ended up in Zion Benton Township High School as an English teacher and as a reading specialist. I was there for a number of years, 8 or 9, while as a teacher, and then back to Racine as an assistant principal.
And then got into administration. From there.
Yep, that was my path to admin there. So,
well, welcome back to Wisconsin.
Thank you.
And by the way, we'll let everybody know he is a Packer fan. So,
absolutely,
that is a good thing. going back, my understanding is that do we know what schools are going to be closed?
We don't. What we're embarking on right now is a. We have a consulting group that specializes in this work, Davis.
And you've used them before, right?
Right. They are. They've worked with the district. After we did our request for proposal process, we got our responses back to that. Davis was selected to help us with this work, to guide us through it. We're beginning this work June 28th is our early throughout the summer and into the school year. And our goal is to have a several options in front of the board around December as our timeline, and to have the board to be able to make a selection based on different options available after that work.
And I understand there's going to be a committee. Has that committee been formed? Have they met? What are we looking at?
Right. Their first meeting will be next week. So we have invitations going out. We need to do some follow-up work and some cleanup work with that group, that membership. But next week, the 28th, Davis, and coming up with what those options are. What are some things that we're looking at? And to really provide a community input on how does Kenosha Unified look with 18,000? Right now we're at 19,400 students. Based on birth trends, we're expecting that'll probably land somewhere around 18,000, maybe 17. So what does the district look like? with that number of students.
How far are we looking out?
It's a 10-year study.
So it's a 10-year study.
Correct.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So my understanding, and this is it's ironic, or maybe it's not. A lot of my studying in economics over the last year to 18 months has been demographic changes with the lowering number of children worldwide mm-hmm. that is going to change economics as we know it. China, because especially with their one-child policy, has huge problems. Russia, if you get into a lot of the different arguments, their war with Ukraine had to be fought now if they were going to do it because they have fewer and fewer men to go into the military. And in the United States, it's hitting everything from schools to being able – what are we looking at as far as – is economically, this can be a devastating trend. What about mm-hmm. for education?
Sure. So what we've seen is we've really seen a population surge that's worked its way through our schools. Back in 94, we had just about the same number of students in 1994 as we do today. We went from – Kenosha was building schools and looking to expand. We were
right.
talking about overcrowding. And that surge is – we're seeing that since 2012. We were seeing this decline in enrollment to the point where we are now. So we're down about 4,000 students than we were at the peak of our enrollment. The way that impacts schools, school funding is based on the number of students.
So many – I always remember when my kids went to school, you always wanted to make sure there was a particular day that your child showed up for school because that's how the state
right. –
they doled out the money depending on the number of kids at a particular day.
Correct. That's it. That's the third Friday count. The third Friday in September is the day when and we do get leeway in case a student's sick on either end of that. But really, that's the date where the state certifies. Here's the number of students you have, and based on this, this is what your taxing authority is, and this is the amount of state aid you'll get. So that is that's an important day in our district, in every district across the state, because that really determines what our funding will be.
Sure. And so now we're looking at a decrease in funding because of the decrease in people, but our taxes didn't go down. And if everybody's decreasing, shouldn't they just increase the amount per child?
So it,
I'm sitting here going, but everybody's population is going down.
Right. So there's many, many moving parts on this. And to really get into a detailed answer, I need to get our chief financial officer
sure.
here with us. He could dive in and explain how every single part moves. What I can tell you is that when we get about this past school year, I believe it was about $10,600 per student. And that is a mix of money from the state. Part of it is state aid and part of it is property taxes. So we are we're allowed to tax up to what that average, and there's a whole bunch of other complicated pieces to it. However, I like to think of it as a what that final number is a coffee cup. So if you think that we get visualize a 20-ounce coffee cup, and there's a mix of property tax and state aid in there. We aren't allowed to change the size of that cup. The only thing that allows us to change the size of that cup is more students.
Okay.
The mix in that cup between property taxes and state aid fluctuates a lot. And that's based on a whole bunch of factors. The property values of the area, poverty levels, the amount of money that the state puts into state aid. So the state can put more money into state aid, and that would reduce property taxes, but it doesn't change the size of our cup.
Okay.
So that's
that's a great way of putting it, right?
That's I had to do that for a test so I could remember it. but that's it. If our cup changes, then we get more money. But if the mix of property tax and state aid changes and our cup size doesn't, then that doesn't impact the amount of spendable money.
So let's talk about – and this is anecdotal. Mm-hmm. There are so many new apartments being built. There's two major complexes that have been announced that 1,000 or more apartments. How and they're multiple bedroom, two and three bedroom apartments. I'm assuming the consultants are going to look and they have statistics that say this many three bedroom apartments means this many children.
Right. And I imagine the median cost of those, or what's the rent, or
right.
what's the cost of the housing will impact it as well. If it's a first-time buyer, then they're likely to have younger children as opposed to a more expensive rent or mortgage that would most likely have somebody in their second or third home. So all those factors need to be weighed and played in. That is an area, and I don't believe it was the apartments alone, but at Summers and Bullen,
right.
those two schools were pretty pretty level enrollment. We may have seen an uptick even at Summers and Pleasant Prairie, really to lay out here's where you can anticipate growth and here's where you can anticipate shifts or declines.
So I know a couple of weeks ago they had an official closing for Wilson, right?
Wilson, right.
And we had a number of the politicians that had gone to Wilson that came back, as well as just individuals that wanted to make that one last goodbye. And I know you're not saying which schools, but I have to believe that they'd be the older schools. Am I wrong in that type of philosophy? Because just for building maintenance, I would think it would cost more money.
Right. Well, and there's a whole – that would be one thing looking at is, do they have a secure entrance? We have had with school safety issues.
Sure.
To make sure that we have secure, we wouldn't want a school where if a school has a secure entrance.
So as you're looking for those schools, and this has to be very difficult, how is it purely a numbers decision? And if so, is there a fairness that And again, you know, I always look and say economics isn't fair. Economics is what economics is. But what is fair when it comes to a school closing or a potential school closing? And how does the school district look at that issue?
Right. That's a great question. And that's one that that's the reason why there's a committee being formed, is to help answer that question. That's one that I wouldn't feel comfortable in my role to present a recommendation without getting some feedback around, because that's a very complicated question. And what's fair for one person will not be interpreted that way for another.
Right.
Having it based in numbers and facts as much as possible is what we need to do. Realizing that these are emotional decisions, and balancing the emotion as well as the facts is what this committee is charged to do. And eventually, the board will have to make the final decision on after a recommendation is made.
For schools, I know we're talking about elementary. Are middle schools questionable? Are high schools questionable at this point? Is everything on the
right.
table?
Looking at the scope of the work, we haven't limited it to a grade level. Looking at our high schools, however, I don't see it touching the high schools at this point. That's my initial thought. I see it more at the K-8 level and taking a look at our enrollment in that area. But that's right. That's where I'm at right now, and that's where we are right now. And once the work begins, it could take us down a different path.
Are there ratings on schools right now as far as cost? I've heard that there's potentially a rating survey type of thing, and would that be used in helping make this type of decision?
Right. We have an internal one that our facilities department does. It doesn't come up with an overall number or value. Rather, it takes a look at different factors, and we rate it on capacity, how many students can we fit in the building. Are things that will be looked at as we begin this, and again, what the housing patterns are,
right,
where we're seeing the city move and the county move.
Do we know what we're going to do with the location that would be the decision of closure?
We don't yet. Those decisions haven't been made. So right now, at least in this initial step, the initial step is to determine what right sizing looks like, and that will be work for another day.
And part of that also would be transportation, because I'm thinking that if I'm no longer going to the neighborhood school, I'm going to be going to a different neighborhood. Is Kenosha Unified then going to be offering some type of a busing situation?
Right. Right now, if your state laws, if you're outside of 2 miles of the school, then busing is provided, transportation is provided. And that's really the guidelines that we use and we follow.
Okay. So then so if you're 2 blocks away and now you're 2 miles and one block,
you
get the transportation.
Correct.
And that gets added to the bottom line for Kenosha Unified.
Correct.
So, again, economics. If you're covering the variable cost of the schools or of a business, you still have fixed costs. You're still going to, at least at this point, have fixed costs. That'd be difficult.
Right. It is difficult. And really, with the way that schools receive money that can be used for operations, the ongoing money to support the functioning of a school is by the student. So outside of that, we're looking at reducing costs,
right,
and different ways to reduce costs.
I guess I'm going to ask, COVID, did it speed this up?
There was actually, I'm trying to remember our data for the year during COVID. I think we actually, Kenosha saw a slight uptick in enrollment during that period because choice was offered. I'd have to go back and double check my stats on that. But I do believe that we did see, because Kenosha offered both in-person and virtual, that there was an uptick in enrollment of people coming to Kenosha for those choice, whatever it happened to be.
Do we still offer virtual?
Very limited.
Okay.
The e-school as a charter school ended this year, and it's now a program in the schools due to different factors at the state that didn't have to do with enrollment, but mainly on how we utilize the e-school for if there's a medical issue or if a student has,
right,
any type of other issue like that.
Do we need brick and mortar?
I think so, yes.
Okay. I mean, I'm just going, and if anything, because I'm agreeing with you, but devil's advocate, we had a couple of years without it. Does that lead us to believe that we did it because we had to, and that's the best? Or did we learn something? Are we better at doing it? Is it something that you see? Australia has large portions because of how everybody is so far away that they have
Experience with virtual learning and in-person learning during that time is that in-person learning is the best educational opportunity for our kids. We've seen it with our test scores. We've seen it with the academic side. We've seen it with the behavioral side. Having students in school with a teacher and with their friends is the best situation for learning and for socialization.
The idea of the way that schools are set up, do we run schools, do you see, and does that affect the hours that these buildings are going to be used? I remember the stories from where my parents, who went to Kenosha High School, they were building Tremper at the time. And they had morning and they had afternoon classes. Is this ever anything, and I'm just using this as an example, are we being as productive in the use of our buildings as what we could be?
The school is such a cultural phenomenon, and I say that just looking at the period we're in now, summer vacation. Summer vacation began so that the kids could help work in the farms. I'm sure the percentage of agriculture in our area?
Fairly low.
Very low.
Right.
But our community has, is that their summer vacation.
I was told the bells were created to get people to get used to the industrial atmosphere.
Correct, right, for the factory model.
Right.
Yep. Now, there are some changes that are occurring. They're not occurring as quickly as the rest of society changes. Society changes at a breakneck speed, and it feels like in education we are we're not quite at that pace. And I think a lot of it, though, has to do with the cultural and emotional tie to what school was like when our parents were children and what they remember. They remember fond memories of summer vacation, and changing that that's where the emotion, I mentioned the facts and the emotion.
Well, it's good for me.
Yeah.
Why isn't it good for Johnny?
Correct. And comes into play a lot of that comes into play when we're talking about schooling.
And this is for another day, but I'm going to just touch on it a little bit. Curriculum? Do you see curriculum changes? I see how there's K-Tech, and there's the specialty schools, and whether it's learning a foreign language and speaking in a foreign language, whether it's if you want to get involved in sciences or you want to be involved in math or engineering or if you want to be involved in arts, there's schools that will go toward that. Does this allow us being used as a specialty school?
Right. And I think that's part of the evolution as times change and as society changes, those changes do. Schools are a reflection of the community. And as the community changes, schools change. So I think that's part of that transition that we're seeing there. And yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if
the prospect of closing, have you gotten feedback? I have to believe. We're against each other when we ran in 2000 against each other in a much more gentler era. I joke when I see her and said, I don't know if I would run today. How do you in this, because it is emotionally charged, how do you deal with that? How do you look? Have that conversation in today's much more upfront, in-your-face type more.
Right. I think the when engaging in difficult conversations like that, I try to keep in mind that everybody who I talk to wants the best for their child, and that's where they're coming from. And as an educator, as someone who's been entrusted with the stewardship of Kenosha Unified, I want the best for their child too. And trying to find common ground to do that is where I operate from, and that's where I assume and believe that the people who call and who are upset are, that's what they're voicing. They want what's best for their child, and there's a fear that that's not what they're getting. So I see it as my job to reassure them and explain to them that the decisions we're making are doing just that.
I'm bringing that into the next question, and that is, will school closures then, I guess they it has to go to redistricting?
There will have to be some boundaries that are changed as well, and that's what the Davis Group has, the soft.
And as a parent for going to unified schools, we bought a house. My wife and I was telling her about this interview, and I said, we bought a house. One of the main considerations was what school the kids would be going to.
Mm-hmm.
And now that's going to be potentially that could be changed. My kids are long gone. My baby's 25.
Mm-hmm.
It could affect – I would imagine it could affect the value of my house. If I went from a school that had a preconceived notion of being a good school, mm-hmm. and then it may not be a good school, or I could have been in a school district that had that preconceived notion that maybe wasn't good, and now I'm going to a school that is supposed to be terrific.
Right.
I guess, what do people do? What are the people? I mean, if they're looking at it from that standpoint,
the goal of this isn't a zero sum game. We are looking at how do we best serve all of the students of Kenosha Unified. How do we best serve our community as we begin looking at making some difficult choices? Just to give an idea of some of the choices that we're facing right now. This is how do we consolidate and how do we keep the services that we're currently offering at a high level without diminishing them. And we can't, just based on the numbers and based on means larger class sizes, services mean fewer support.
Extracurriculars?
It could be. As we look at cutting extracurriculars is not something that I would target first, but it could be support in that.
And what does support mean?
It could be librarians. It could be other support teachers.
Okay.
In larger class sizes, fewer opportunities for kids. So as we look to fewer interventionists, reading interventionists, math interventionists, as we look to as we're looking at the whole picture of the community, based on the number of staff that would have to be reduced in order versus closing a school, we would be looking at about 10 FTE or 10 full-time teachers for our staff members, not just teachers, per school that we would possibly close for an elementary school, for example.
Okay, let's run one more time. What
sure.
exactly? There's 10 that will lose their job? So is that what they're...
That would be the choice. So okay. If we're looking at... So closing a school runs about between $800,000 to $1 million of savings.
Okay.
If we were to identify those savings, 80% of the... cost for a school district is salary and benefits.
Sure.
That's really the only – we provide a service. In order to save that – come up with that equivalent amount of money, that $1 million, it would result in about 10 people losing their job who would no longer be working with our students, providing them instruction in whatever the topic happens to be, wherever it falls. So by reducing the number of locations, we hope our plan is to continue the high level of services we're providing. So that would be my answer to that.
Okay.
Is that our goal is to make sure we're teaching and instructing our students to the highest level we possibly can. And we need, in order to continue to do that, we have to do it in fewer spots.
I, and again, I'm going to play devil's advocate here. If your committee came back to you and said, we would rather have the other direction, we would rather have the cut to 10 spots and keep the facility open. Or, I mean, I guess
I would question the educational soundness of that. And
okay.
I also want to, I think it's important for
across the country. Because of lower birth ratios.
Correct. And it's a, I guess that would, ultimately that's a decision the board needs to make. I know my recommendation would be I want to provide the highest quality education for our kids. If it means doing it in fewer locations, then it means doing it in fewer locations. However, as in my role as superintendent, I'm always going to say I want to provide the highest educational service for our kids, period. And this is playing out, and I've been in contact with superintendents in other cities who are going in Wisconsin, who are going through the same process. We're not alone in this situation.
And as we were talking earlier, and it's just my opinion, as well as thousands of economists, our world 10 years from now will not look like the world today, if only because of the demographic.
Right. And that's right. And in my, again, I'll go back, my main objective as a superintendent is how do we keep our educational system running at its peak form so we are preparing our students for life after KUSD best we can.
As we see in 5 years in Kenosha?
Well, my hope is that we're doing some planning right now in that area. We have our school board has adopted a moral imperative. And what that moral imperative is it's a empirical and emotional statement about what our goal is for a KUSD student. And I don't have it memorized verbatim yet, but it basically breaks down that all of our students will have an equal opportunity to prepare for career in colleges in a school that is safe, welcoming, and led by a highly resourced and led by a highly qualified teacher. That's what we want. And we're beginning to measure that now and put metrics around it. As part of that, we're also doing some work on what our portrait of a learner. Several meetings with over 200 students, staff, community members to talk about what are those qualities that our community expects and desires our students to graduate with. And we are in the process of finishing up that portrait of a learner. So my hope is 5 years from now, and I'm not sure this is exactly the direction you were thinking.
That, well, that's okay.
But my hope is that 5 years from now, we will have students who are graduating with those ideal qualities of a learner. And those aren't finalized yet, but we're talking about students who are good communicators, students who are able to problem solve, work on teams. Business community says they are looking for when they interview?
I'm being told that the business community looks and says, we can teach you the other things. We can't teach you to be an empathetic, nice person.
Exactly. and engaging our community in coming up with what those qualities are, beginning to measure them and put them into our improvement plan process and our continuous improvement work, I think has come to life and reporting out on how we're doing on that. So that's my goal 5 years from now, is that we will be able to say a student who graduates, the students who are graduating from Kenosha Unified have these durable skills, and we're seeing it in action. And that's not as well as, in addition to, high academic standards.
So if we realize that closing a school is going to save somewhere around that $1 million mark, how many schools do we need to close?
I'm not going to have, again, I want to, it's going to, we need to right size. So I'm not going, our budget is balanced. However, there's always needs, right?
Of course.
We always can do more.
Sure.
And we always want to do more for our kids and for the staff that works with our kids. So those are things that we have to balance moving forward to see exactly what we can do.
So you're anticipating, because over time the number of students are going down, you're anticipating, in other words, Kenosha's being ahead of the curve as you're looking to be able to put this commission together.
Correct. We are. And we're also, I don't know if ahead of the curve, we're in the curve is probably the best way to say it. When we peaked in 2012 with 23,000 students, the closure, and I believe that time, that was either, I can't remember when McKinley Middle School closed, somewhere around that.
Somewhere, I was going to say, right in.
Right around that right. time period. But from then until the Wilson closure, our enrollment's gone down about 4,000 students, and we've just had the one closure at Wilson. So we have extra capacity in our school.
And we built a couple of schools.
We did.
During that time.
Yeah.
Out west.
Sure. Right, where the population was. So looking at, are we using the resources we're getting most effectively? I would rather be paying for or using our resources, reusing our revenue to on programs for students as opposed to heating a building that's partially opened, or partially filled, rather.
So we have 3 minutes.
Okay.
You have the last word. What do you want people to know when they turn the radio off after this program?
Great question. I guess what I'm wanting the community to understand is that this is being done so that we can standards that we have, the high levels of support and services for our students. It may cause us to reduce the number of locations we offer those services, but the level of services will remain high as we go through this. And I guess that would be the one takeaway that I'm hoping that everybody who listens to this program walks away with, is that this is about maintaining programs and less about heating buildings that aren't to capacity.
Dr. Jeff Weiss, Superintendent of Schools. This has been Community Matters. I'm Bob Haggerty. I hope you've learned. I hope you've enjoyed. I certainly have. Have a great weekend, everybody. We'll see you in 4 weeks.
You've been listening to Education Matters, heard Saturday mornings at 10:30 here on WGTD. Archive programs are available on our website at WGTD.org.
The Gateway Radio Reading Service is for visually impaired listeners who would like to have newspapers and books read to them. In the Kenosha Racine area, easy-to-operate radios are available free of charge. Visit WGTD.org or call 564-3744.
I'm Gregory Berg, and I hope that you can join me for Monday's morning show here on WGTD. Due to some technical difficulties, we were unable to play the program that was scheduled for last Monday, so I'm glad that we can share that interview with you today. It's an important book by attorney James Kwok, who examines our criminal justice system. In his book, The Fear of Too Much Justice, Race, Poverty, and the Persistence of Inequality in the